the home stretch of the hard times, we took a hard left, but we're all right. Yeah, life sure can try to put love through, but we built this right. So who's ever gonna move it when the bones are good? The rest don't matter. Yeah, the pain can peel, the glass could shatter. Let it rain, still we're not missing. When the rain a crack in the foundation, baby, I know when the storm we're facing will blow right over while we stay. But the house don't fall when the bones are good. It's on the hook, baby, you and I can't even mess it up, although we both try. No, he don't always go the way we planned it, but the wolves came and went, and we're still standing when the bones are good, the rest don't matter, yeah, the pain can peel. Last good shadow, let it rain. Just you and I remain the same. When there rain a crack in the foundation, baby, I know when the storm we're facing will blow right over while we stay. But the house don't fall when the bones are good. Bones are good. The rest don't matter. Pain could peel the glass. The glass could shatter. Bones are good. The rest don't matter. Pain could peel the glass. The glass could shatter. The bones are good. The rest don't matter. Yeah, the pain could peel. The glass could shatter. The rain a crack in the foundation, baby, I know when the storm we're facing will blow right over while we stay. But the house don't fall when the bones are good.
Yeah. Well, good morning. Welcome to CORE. Whether you're checking us out online, listening to our podcast, or here in person, we just want you to know again how incredibly excited we are that you have chosen to join us as we dive in to part two of this series that is unlike any other, called Playlist. And if you're here with us for the very first time, or maybe just back for the first time in a really long time, you just got a glimpse as to why this series is unlike any other. You see, for 5 weeks, we're exploring some of our favorite songs and favorite artists of all time. Last week, we kicked off this series with the Beatles, and today with Maren Morris. Next week, we're headed to Maroon 5, and we'll cap this series off with a little bit of Journey and then some Michael Jackson. And we believe with all of our hearts that there is nothing like music in our lives, right? That music has this uncanny ability to communicate things like nothing else in the human language can communicate. It connects with our soul and connects with our story in a profound way. And because of that, we thought there was no more fitting way for us to experience life change and growth than to do it through the avenue of music. And for us to explore this truth, that your favorite song has more to say. And today we embark on breaking down this song called The Bones. It's a song that in 2020 spent multiple weeks on Billboard number one and was deemed the CMA Country Music Song of the Year in 2020. And this very song revolves around this concept, if you've never heard it before. This concept that in our lives, when the bones are good, nothing else matters. That no matter what this life throws at our relationships, when they are built on a solid foundation, those relationships stand the test of time. And if we were to get really honest this morning, as we look at every relationship of our lives, we would be forced to admit this one truth. Don't we want that to be the way we describe every single one of our relationships? That no matter how difficult things get, no matter what this life or this world throws at it, and this life, we all know this from experience, will throw things at our relationships. No matter what is thrown at it, we have relationships that stand the test of time, that can't be knocked over, that can't be derailed, that make it till the end. We want that for our marriages. We want that for our friendships. We want that for our parenting kid relationships. We want that for our teams at work or our coworkers or even our roommates that we're living with in the same house. You see, every single one of us want our relationships to be great. And yet, time and time again, what we've heard and what we've experienced is this crazy truth. That falling in love is easy, but staying in love is hard. That finding friends is easy, but keeping friends is hard. And typically, the reason why that reality rings true in our lives time and time again is because we have built the relationships of our lives on this one common myth. That in order to have a successful relationship in this world, it is predicated on finding the one. Y'all know what I'm talking about, right? That person in our lives who just magically connects with our soul. Like the first time we see them, all the bells and whistles go off, and we know that if we can date them, if we can marry them, then everything will be easy. And yet, time and time again, what we've experienced is we thought we had the one, and it didn't go as we dreamt it to go. You see, because maybe finding the one is about something different than just some magical connection. Maybe it's really about finding the one that's willing to work and grow at this relationship. Maybe it's really about finding the one that's willing to work on their imperfections. Or maybe it's about finding the one that's willing to admit their imperfections, because oftentimes we've all been in relationships where that can be few and far between, where one side of the equation is never wrong, but the other side is always wrong. But what does it look like for us to engage with somebody in a relationship that's willing to put in the time, put in the effort to ensure that 10 years from now, our relationship won't be in the same place, that our relationship will be better because we've invested in, poured into it, and done everything we can to grow in this relationship? But that's not all. What if it isn't just about finding the one, but it's also about becoming the one? It's also about acknowledging this reality that every great relationship is built on two parties willing to work at it simultaneously. You've heard it said, it takes two to tango. And every great relationship acknowledges the reality that it will not work if there is but one party willing to work and the other one is not. It takes two people willing to go all out. But the question that rises to the surface is always this. If that's what we want for our lives and that's what we're being called to in our marriages and our parenting and our friendships and our relationships within this world, how do we make it happen? And we go back to this familiar guy that we talked about last week on Easter. One of Jesus' disciples named Peter. And if you remember last week from Easter, if you were here, Peter has a checkered past. Peter is not perfect. And so if you feel a little bit imperfect, you will relate to Peter's story. Peter has made mistake after mistake, opened his mouth, stuck his foot in his mouth more times than you can count. But what we know about Peter is that years later, after his time with Jesus has come and gone, Jesus lived on this earth. Peter spent 3 years with him. He died on a cross, rose again. Then Peter got about 40 days, maybe about 5 or 6 weeks with Jesus. And then Jesus left. And after that time, Peter looks back on his encounter and everything he learned from Jesus, and what he came away with was this. That if you want to engage in successful relationship on this earth, it all boils down to one simple tactic. It's a tactic that he saw modeled for him every single day for 3 years straight. And he makes it so ridiculously simple in this letter that he wrote to the Jewish church. We find it this morning in the book of 1 Peter, chapter 1. If you haven't done so already, this is an incredible opportunity for you to grab your weekly. It's what you got when you came in this morning. And if you crack that open on the inside, you'll find a notes page. that you can follow along with us as we move through the text. Maybe even grab a pen from the seat back behind you or seat back in front of you and fill in some blanks as we go that'll help you in your relationships in the weeks and in the months to come. But here is what we find Peter boiling it all down to, that if you want to be in a successful relationship, this is what it must look like. Starting in verse 22, he writes this: "You must love each other deeply with all your heart." That if you want to be in a successful relationship, you must find a way to love other people with all your heart. And it's like Peter's saying, hey guys, I watched the best do it. You want to know what loving people with all your heart looks like? I watched Jesus love people to his very last breath. He gave up to the last inch of his life everything he could to love people well. You want to love people? Do it like that. And you're like, yeah, that sounds real easy, right? How many of us are willing to do that? But what's so incredible is that from this very passage from Peter, it's this reality that in order for us to love other people and be in the relationship we were designed to be in, we must give everything we have towards that relationship. But how do we love with all of our heart? How do we love well? How do we love people in the right direction? Because many of us, we've been in relationship before, right, where it's like, if I just try harder, that's not the solution. Trying harder in the wrong direction isn't going to get us any closer to the solution. And so what does it look like to start moving in the right direction? And moving in the right direction in our relationships boils down to building our relationships on the right foundation. We know the importance of a foundation, right? That when you buy a house or you own a house, that when the shingles blow off the top or the siding begins to crack, your house isn't in danger of collapsing around those things. But when you walk down into your basement and you see the basement wall starting to bow in, you know that if that problem is not corrected, what's going to happen? That eventually the house will crumble. That eventually the house will cave in on itself. You see, Jesus knew to a T that in our lives, if we want to live the best lives possible, experience rich and satisfying lives from this day forward, then our starting blocks must be appropriate. Then our building blocks, the foundation, must be in the correct place. He believed it so much that Jesus said this in Luke chapter 6. He said, "I'll show you what it looks like when someone comes to me, listens to my teaching, and then follows it." It's like a person building a house who digs deep and lays the foundation on solid rock. When the floodwaters rise and break against that house, it stands firm because it is well built. But anyone who hears and doesn't obey is like a person who builds a house right on the ground without a foundation. When the floods sweep down against that house, it will collapse into a heap of ruins. See, I believe with all of my heart that Jesus believed that our lives and our relationships and the success of them and how long they last would always be determined by whether or not we were building on the right foundation. But here's the incredible thing. We have a God who doesn't just speak facts like, well, you got to build it on the right foundation, but figuring out that foundation, that's up to you. Good luck with that one. No, we have a God who said, hey, you're supposed to build your relationships on a strong foundation that will withstand the storms of life, that will withstand whatever this life can throw at it, and I sent my son to give you what those foundational pieces are supposed to be. I love you too much to allow you to just figure it out on your own. I sent my son to be an example of what it looked like to build your relationships on the right foundation so that your marriages last, so that your friendships last, so that your dating relationships are healthy from this day forward. And over the course of the next few minutes, as we break down these foundational pieces that God has given you and I to succeed in relationship from this day forward, many of the things that we're going to talk about directly relate to marriage. And so if you're sitting here and you're married, the foundational pieces that we're going to talk about are something that you cannot miss, are something that have incredible power in your future from this day forward. But if you're sitting there, and maybe you're just in a dating relationship, or maybe you're just hoping that someday you get married or you get married again, You're sitting there and you're the boss of a company, or you have kids and you're in a parent-kid relationship, or you live in a house with other people. Whatever it may be, today has the power to change your future, because each of these foundational pieces that God gives us isn't just for marriage. They're for every healthy relationship we want to enter into. But the choice that we must make is this. Will we choose to implement them? Will we choose to use them in our lives to be better, to be healthier within the context of our relationship? And let me just say this. For those of you in this room who are not married, who are dating or not yet dating, just hoping to be or maybe will be married one day, you see, I believe with all of my heart that maybe today is even more important for you. Because for those of us in this room, help me out, all y'all married people out there. For those of us in this room who, like, we've been married for 5 years or 10 years or 25 or 50 years, or maybe we've come out of a failed marriage in our life, when we look back at our relationships, wouldn't we all testify to the fact that it would have been a whole lot better if we had known these things before we started the relationship? That in our houses, it's a whole lot cheaper, right, if they just would have set the foundation right the first time than for us to pay someone to walk down into our basement and to fix it as the walls are caving in on each other. That we have an opportunity set before us that from this day forward, we can set the foundation in the right spot. But if you're sitting there and you're saying, Ben, I don't think you understand just how deep we are in this. We're 10 years in, we're 25 years in, and I don't know that we can go back and repair the foundation. You see, if your house is still standing and you're still in that relationship, it's not too late to fix the foundation. It's not too late to go back and invest the time to shore up the walls and make sure that the house stands the test of time. And so how do we do that? Well, it boils down to these four key pieces. These four key pieces that I believe with all of my heart, Jesus shows us are the foundations for great relations. And everything begins here. That in order for us to have great relationship with other people, we must build on this first foundation, this first building block of being great listeners. The foundation for great relations is listening. That if you want to build a great relationship and love someone with all your heart, you have to listen with all your heart. Listening is probably the most important skill in building successful relationships. Because you can't love somebody without listening to them. If you don't listen to them, you know what you're communicating? Every time you don't listen to someone, you communicate, I don't really care about what you have to say. My opinion, my thoughts, my words are more important than yours. They are more right than yours are, and I don't really care what you have to say. And I know many of us are sitting here today and we're thinking, well, I'm a good listener. When really the harsh reality is we've just slowly become good hearers. That we hear what the other person is saying time and time again, but we're not actively listening to that person. You see, listening requires intentionality. Listening requires work. Listening requires us to put in the time and the attention to actually know what's going on in that person's life and in their words. And when it comes to really listening, what I believe with all of my heart is when I look at my life, my marriage, my relationship with my kids, I have a long ways to go when it comes to my skill of listening. When it comes to how active I am in listening to the people that I love. And I'm willing to bet that many of us in this room fall in that exact same boat. You see, in order to be true, active, great listeners, it requires us to become empathetic in our listening. To be empathetic listeners. And empathetic listeners really key in on two distinct traits when it comes to our listening. The first is this, that in order for us to have empathy in our listening, it requires us to listen for what isn't being said. Some of us know this all too well, right? That just because someone says they're fine doesn't actually mean they're fine. That what determines whether or not they're fine is how they say they're fine. Guys, am I right? Can I get an amen on that one? That sometimes in our lives, it requires us to look at what isn't being said, to look at the body language being used when that is being said, and then to respond accordingly to what we are actively seeing and hearing. In order for us to be great people who love with all of our heart, it requires us to put in work when it comes to listening. Not just hearing, not just nodding our heads, not just saying uh-huh and moving on, but actually trying to hear what the other person is saying. Empathetic listening requires us to hear what isn't being said, but it doesn't stop there. You see, the second distinct thing that empathetic listening does, it attempts to put you in the other person's shoes. That great listeners, as they're having a disagreement or an argument or a heated discussion, whatever you may call it within your household, as you have those things, throughout that discussion, you attempt to put yourself in the other person's shoes. You attempt to see it from their perspective. And the litmus test to whether or not we are successful at that and we are working at that is at the end of that disagreement, that discussion with the person we love, we answer this one question. Can I argue this from their point of view? Can I approach this disagreement from their point of view now that the discussion is over? If the answer to that question is no, then you haven't listened. If the answer to that question is no, basically what you have told them is, I don't care about what you have to say. Empathetic listening, great listeners, when you really care about someone, it's about becoming capable of listening to them without interrupting. And hang on, I didn't warn you guys that today was going to be hard. I didn't warn you guys that today is going to push every single one of us in every relationship of our life. That great listeners are also capable of listening to somebody else without thinking of their own response the entire time that the other person is talking. Hello? Y'all okay? Like, that's Ben Carver to a T. That's my MO. Because I'm not the brightest guy, but I want to have the brightest response. I want to have the wittiest response. And in order for me to do that in the middle of a discussion or the middle of an argument, it takes your entire talking time for me to think up the next great response. And so I don't really listen to what the person is saying. I'm just trying to think of my next response within that argument. And time again, what I'm doing is I'm creating division in that relationship because I haven't heard what the person I love is actually trying to say. You see, here's how James breaks it down. Check this out. He says, understand this, my dear brothers and sisters. You must all be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to get angry. It's like James is saying, you know, in those disagreements that you enter into, the fights, the discussions that you have in your life, too often we're so busy fighting to be right, fighting for our point of view, that we don't stop to actually listen to the other person's point of view. We forget that listening is an essential foundation for that relationship. That listening without needing to talk is so important. It's something that we constantly, if you're anything like me, need reminded of in the midst of our relationships. King Solomon, one of the wisest men to ever walk on the earth, breaks it down this way. This cuts right to the heart of it. Spouting off before listening to the facts is both shameful and foolish. Talking before listening is both shameful and foolish. In our lives, do we wait to open our mouths before we've listened? And I don't know if you've done the math on how you and I were created perfectly by our Creator, but if you've noticed this, we were created with two ears and one mouth. And for me, the math plays out this way, that maybe we were being called to listen twice as much as we speak. Then in order for us to have great relationships, it requires us to do the hard work of listening first. And then secondly, we build the foundation of being people in our relationships who are willing to accept. People who are willing to accept the good with the bad and the ugly. And for those of you who are married in the room, come back to me for just a second, because what I'm about to say you don't want to miss. What I believe with all of my heart is that you did not go to the altar to alter that person. When you married that person, you did not go to the altar to alter that person. You stood across from them and you recited vows that went something like this: I accept you for better or worse. For better or for worse. That's what we're being called to. Why? Because that's how we were loved. In our better and in our worse, we were accepted. By the God of the universe, who was perfect, accepted us in our imperfections, accepted us in our quirkiness, accepted us in our mistakes and our regrets. How do I know that? Because Paul makes it clear. In Romans chapter 15, he says, therefore, accept each other just as Christ has accepted you, so that God will be given glory. Accept each other just as you were accepted. Not because you earned it, not because you were perfect, not because you had your act together, not because you always treated him right. No, that wasn't why we were accepted. We were accepted because he was attempting to love us with everything we had. And yet what often gets in the way of that is this. So often in our relationships, we lose sight of the fact we are married to or in relationship with another imperfect person. What would change in our actions and in our perspective if we just consistently reminded ourselves, I'm in relationship with another imperfect person. They're not always going to get it right. That my spouse won't always get it right. That my kids won't always get it right. That my coworkers won't always get it right. My roommate won't always get it right. We are married to other imperfect people. And maybe sometimes we need to remind ourselves of this, that at this very moment, they should be reminding themselves of the exact same thing. That they got into relationship with an imperfect person. Me, who doesn't always get it right. Who makes mistakes. Who chooses the wrong thing. Who chooses not to listen. I think oftentimes in our lives, one of the biggest hiccups that we make over the course of our relationships is that over time, we forget this reality that doing quirky things and hurtful things are two different things. You see, the longer we find ourselves in relationship, the more we associate those two things with each other. The more our response becomes the same to those two things. That the quirky things that our spouse does, they anger us and they upset us. And we begin to deem those things as hurtful things when really they're not at all. But just because your spouse doesn't put the teepee on the teepee roll the right way doesn't mean it's something that's worthy of getting angry about. I mean, it was probably 6 or 7 years into my marriage until I realized that my wife had a perception of which way the toilet paper was supposed to go on the toilet paper roll. Like, I just always thought as long as it came off and you were able to wipe yourself with it, that's all that mattered. But in my wife's eyes, it's like, no, it goes over. You always go over. You don't go under with the toilet paper roll. And while I'd like to stymie my wife with all of that, what I know about myself is we have two toddlers in our house. And because we have two toddlers and we don't want to go through all of our glassware and all of our plates as they fly off the table and as they're stabbed with forks and hit with knives, we have those little plastic, like, 3-compartment plates that we use for our kids at every single meal. And because they're plastic, when you load the dishwasher, they must always go on the top rack, right? You put them on the bottom, you got a melted mess in your dishwasher. And so they always go on the top rack. Well, for me, I always have this perception that when you load the dishwasher, it should always be loaded from the back to the front. And my wife, she probably does not even know this, but my wife always loads from the front to the back. And you know what happens over time? You allow that to go on for a year without saying anything, and the animosity builds over plastic plates and which way they are loaded into the dishwasher, y'all. And every time, it's like, how could you not understand? You load it from the back, that's where it's difficult, and then it gets easier as you come forward. And every time I open the dishwasher up, I get a little bit angry, and I take all 5 plastic plates that are in the front, and I move them to the back, into the rightful spot. You see, in our lives, we become trained to associate quirkiness with hurtful. And that's just not the same thing. That your spouse is quiet, and them being quiet around your friends is just their personality. It's not something worth getting upset about.
And let me just say this. In our marriages and our relationships, when we get mad about the quirky things that the people we love, what they do, it's not their fault. It's ours. Because we haven't accepted those things with all of our heart. We haven't accepted the way in which they were created different from us. And in order for us to love them well and love them in the right direction and begin to build a solid foundation, it requires us to accept the way in which they were created and even accept their imperfections at times and their mistakes. And so we must listen, we must accept, and then third, maybe the most difficult one of all, we must approach our relationship with humility. With humility. You knew this one was coming, right? Because the number one killer of all relationships is selfishness. But that's the final straw in every relationship. When the relationship turns into at least one party of the two, turning every action into, this is all about me. That's where the house begins to crumble. That's where the relationship begins to falter. But do you know that humility is the foundational piece of every unselfish act? Humility is the key building block to every unselfish act that we perform in this life, in our relationships. So much so that Paul writes this in his church, in his letter to the church in Philippi. He says, but don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others, but be humble, thinking of others as better than yourselves. Humility in relationships is the ability to do something for somebody else without expecting anything in return. Humility is about not having an agenda, just a 100% focus on someone else's needs instead of my own. And humility isn't thinking less of yourself, it's just thinking of yourself less. There's a key distinction there. Humility isn't thinking less of yourself, it's simply thinking of yourself less. It's simply about approaching relationship through the lens of what can I do to serve you? What can I do for you without expecting you to do anything for me? Humility in a servant's heart always goes hand in hand. Humility never keeps score. Humility never hangs on to another person's wrong, just waiting for the right moment where I can bring it back out and hold it over their head. Humility never holds the trump card, waiting for that moment where you're down in an argument and you can bring back, oh yeah, you remember that one time? Humility doesn't do that. But here's the danger. On the opposite side of humility is pride. And pride is one of, if not the most difficult thing for us to see in ourselves. Everybody else can see it in you. Your spouse can see it when it starts to take root. Your friends can see it when pride starts to take root. But we are always the last one to see when pride has taken over in our lives. And so how do we keep that from happening? How do we keep that disease from inching into our lives and spreading like a wildfire in our relationships and our actions? Well, by every single day, reminding ourselves of the steps we need to take to remain humble. Think of yourself less. Do things for other people without expecting something in return. Love others even when they don't deserve it. And every time we choose one of those actions in our lives, you know what happens? That pride that started to inch in, we take an active approach of pushing it back out. There's no room for you here. I'm too busy acting in love and humility with this person that I don't have room for pride to creep in. I'm thinking of myself less. I'm serving you without expecting in return. Pride, get out. I don't have room for you in the middle of this relationship. And every single day we choose to act in humility to not allow the pride that we can't see in ourselves to take root in our lives. And so we listen. We accept. Every day we act with humility. And then lastly, in our relationships, in order for them to be built on the right foundation, it must be built on our ability to love God. On our ability to love God. You see, there's this moment in Scripture were the Pharisees, the religious leaders of the day. They attempt to back Jesus into a corner and trick him. And they come to Jesus and they pose this question. Hey, Jesus, you know that list of 10 commandments? Why don't you pick the most important one off there and tell us which one is the most important? And in Jewish law, what they knew was none was more important than the other. They were all supposed to be equally important. And Jesus backdoored them in the moment. He says, oh, you just want the most important commandment? It's actually not one of the 10 commandments. Let me go back to the Shema, this thing that the Jewish people recited every single morning when they woke up and every night before they went to bed. And Jesus says, you want to know the most important thing that you can do in your life and in your relationships? It looks like this. Check this out in Matthew chapter 22. Jesus replied to their question about which is the most important commandment like this. You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. A second is equally important. Love your neighbor as yourself. You see, the very moment where Jesus, in the original Greek language, threw that word equally in there, he was making this statement that this isn't one and two. These are both one. Why would Jesus give two when he was asked for the most important? Because Jesus knew that these two commandments could never be mutually exclusive from each other. These two things can't operate well separate from each other. That each of them required the other one to be done at its best. In this moment, Jesus was saying this: you can't love God and hate people. You can't be right with God and wrong with others. It doesn't work that way. You can't operate that way. You can't say you love the Creator and yet hate his creation. But what he also knew was this: you also can't love people without having God as a part of the equation. And you're saying, Ben, whoa, 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 that's where you lost me. That's where this doesn't equate. That's where this doesn't make sense. There are plenty of people who don't love God who seem to be loving people. My pushback? Not to their fullest potential. Not to their best ability. Why? Because what I know about my God is this. Unlike any other religion, unlike any other God, my God sent his only son to put on flesh and blood, to set an example of this one thing, that real love looks like giving people what they don't always deserve. That the best kind of love looks like giving other people the things that they don't always deserve. That's what Jesus did on this earth. That's what he did on that cross. He gave me, Ben Carver, in the midst of my imperfections, in the midst of me turning my back, in the midst of me choosing my own way, in the midst of my mistakes and my regrets, he gave me what I didn't deserve, a way to fix it, a way to make it right. He was setting this precedent in our lives that we will come in contact with other people, we will be in relationship with other people, who in the moments of their lives in which they make mistakes and have regrets, when you're in relationship with imperfect people, they don't always deserve to be forgiven. They don't always deserve to be listened to. They don't always deserve to be served. But real love isn't always about giving people what they deserve. That's the example that my God set. That's the precedent that he put forth in your life and in my life. That's what he's calling us to. And without that being a part of the equation, we will just continue to do relationship that always drifts back to this one spot, that my relationship with you boils down to me giving you what you deserve. No relationship can withstand that. It can last for a while, but not for forever when it's built on that. When we revert back to that, without listening, without accepting, without humility, and without loving God, we will never have the foundation we need to build strong relationship. This morning, I want to end here. See, I believe with all of my heart that marriage was God's design, that sex was God's design. We've got a good God, amen? that parenting was God's design, that family was God's design, that friendship was God's design, that community was God's design. But you know what else was God's design? For us to do all of those things well. For us to experience the best life possible because we had these foundational pieces in every single one of those relationships. And this morning, some of us in our relationships, in our marriages, we need to get back to a place in which we renew our vows. And I'm not talking about our vows, the things we recited across from that person 5 years ago, 20 years ago, 50 years ago. I'm talking about these vows that Paul gives to you and I about what our love should look like at its essence. You see, in 1 Corinthians, Paul writes this, and what would change in our relationships if we were willing to step forward and make this vow in our relationship? Paul writes this, so no matter what I say, what I believe, and what I do, I'm bankrupt without love. And this is where the vows start. My love never gives up. My love cares more for others than for self. My love doesn't want what it doesn't have. My love doesn't strut, doesn't have a swelled head, doesn't force itself on others, isn't always me first, doesn't fly off the handle, doesn't keep score of the sins of others, doesn't revel when others grovel, takes pleasure in the flowering of truth. My love will put up with anything. It trusts God always. My love always looks for the best. Never looks back, but keeps going to the end. And when we make that the foundation of our relationships, he finishes in such a perfect way. That kind of love never dies. You see, I get it. Life sure can put our love through it. But when you build it right, nothing can take this thing down. Life and relationships won't always go the way we planned it. But your most important relationships can stay standing when the bones are good. When the bones are good, nothing else matters. Nothing can take this down. But are you willing to put in the work and go back to the foundational pieces? Begin to position your relationship on top of listening and accepting and humility and loving God. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for what a great God you are. God, we thank you for sending your only Son to set this example in our lives. This example that real love, that great love in relationships isn't always about giving others what they deserve. Sometimes real love is about giving others what they don't deserve. Being able to offer forgiveness when the people in our lives don't deserve it. Being able to serve others when they don't deserve it. Listen to others when they don't deserve it. God, we're being called to love with all of our heart. God, in order to do that, we have to be people who have the courage, even when it's hard, to listen with all of our heart, to accept with all of our heart, to be humble with all of our heart, and to love you with all of our heart. May we be willing to do that from this day forward and see that it's not too late to go back to work and to fix the foundation. It's in your name I pray. Amen. Today, I know that all of that was difficult, and thinking through implementing that into our marriages or our friendships, our relationships can be difficult. But I wanted to end on a little bit higher of a note. I wanted to share with you all some exciting news that we are walking through as a church. Some of y'all may have heard rumors or write-ups in the paper about this, but we as Core Community Church have officially bought 2 new properties. And we know, as you look around here and if you could see our kids' classrooms, that we are bursting at the seams in being able to serve all of you and your families and our city to the very best of our ability within the 6,200 square feet that we have right here on this property. And so we have been walking in faith and exploring every option possible. And we had an only God moment and an only God opportunity come across the table. And we've officially bought two new properties right here in our city that eventually, when we move into those properties, will expand our footprint from 6,200 square feet to a church building with over 33,000 square feet and then a community impact center that will be over 37,000 square feet. And we could not be more excited about what God is doing in and through this place, the ways in which, as we have taken scary, obedient steps, that we could tell you story after story on the back end of God blowing our minds and being faithful and doing incredible things to continue to spur us forward and say, I know this seems crazy, but just keep walking forward. Just keep plowing ahead into what I have for you. And what I believe with all of my heart is this. It's the reason why we do this. Is because we believe that the best is yet to come. That God isn't done in this place. God isn't done through this place. God isn't done with this city. God isn't done with this county. And we want to position ourselves as a church in a place in which we can be at the very center of His will, doing everything we can to impact our world, our city, for Him and His kingdom. And we are confident that He is calling us into this and He has given us this opportunity. And so we wanted to share that with you all and celebrate with you all as we explore over the course of the next 18 months a move that is on the horizon and a move that we believe will impact countless lives for Christ. And so with that, I want to say this. Thank you. Moves like this and decisions like this are only possible because of your faithfulness. Because of your faithfulness in giving, because of your faithfulness in investing and serving in this place and being people who have a heart that aligns with God's heart of being here for the lost and the hurting and the needy, that allow us to move forward with confidence in God's will to be a church that's centered on that as well. And so thank you for that. Again, we want you guys to know just how incredibly excited we are that you have chosen to join us. If today's your first time here, after the service, we'd love for you to stop really quickly back at the Connections booth. We've got a first-time visitor pack that we'd love for you to get your hands on. We promise no awkward conversations, no strings attached, just something that we want to say thank you with. And next week, you do not want to miss part three of this series as we explore a little bit of Maroon 5. It's going to be off the hook. We are so excited for it, and the message is going to be absolutely powerful. Thanks so much for being here this morning. Have a great rest of your Sunday. See you soon.